I started setting two conjectures of Concevich, one of them related to quantum field theory and the other one related to Virtus models. And I spent time kind of explaining the strategy of the proof for the second conjecture. So,
we can't see the board.
But they can't board. No,
the first conjecture problem.
All right, there we go.
Okay.
No? Okay. Okay. So the problem concerns quantum field theory, and like we don't have a proper mathematical definition of quantum field theory, but assume we have such. So any sensible definition. Of quantum theory involves some infinitesimal vector bundle, let's say of states F over some space-time manifold M. And the conjecture of Concevich is as follows. So let me call it conjecture A. Which you can read in a very nice paper called Operator Motives in Deformation Quantization, which goes back to like 99, I think. So it says the following thing. So given the quantum field theory on RD, so on flat space, is relation symmetries. Actually, in the paper of Concevich, he asks for dilatation symmetries, but it's not necessary. Then, Clayton invariants forms on RD with values in F form an ED algebra, so namely an algebra of the d-dimensional little disk operator. So that's the conjecture, and it has several, consequences. So let's make a bunch of remarks about this. Like it's an ED algebra in the category of complexes of R vector spaces. So if we work in the category of vector space of a field of characteristic zero, if A is an ED algebra, then it implies that there's some shift of degree, A becomes a Lie or L infinity algebra. And like additionally to this, Kovic says, or claims or conjecture that this may be related. So the combinatorics of this may be related to the Kohn-Kreimer work on renormalization. But it doesn't in which way. So the fact that we have an infrastructure tells us the following thing. So there should be a deformation theoretic problem behind this. So deformation theoretic interpretation
is very simple. It's a sensible definition of QFT. Yeah. Can you give an example to just believe that statement?
So the question is if I can give an example of QFT for which we have like an infinite dimensional vector bundle. Like typically, space of field would be just kind of space of sections of a vector bundle. So like the space of section itself, infinite dimensional space. Most of the time, you don't expect the like state or field dependent on something, and it doesn't make any sense. But I don't have a specific example in mind. And anyway, and I'm not going to be thinking about quantum field theory. That's the motivation for
from a bundle.
No, sections from a bundle. That's true. So Kosevich does not say more than that. He just say he wants to define field theory as some infinite dimensional bundle together with the filtration and some axioms, and he does not specify it much more than that. He doesn't give an example. So the question is, what is the physical meaning of the fiber? I don't know. Well, one, that's this, that's this set of states localized at given points of space-time. But I don't know. It's a...
That's exactly a problem.
Sorry?
States.
I agree. So I don't know about the physics interpretation of this kind of infinite dimensional light moment.
Maybe it's a family of
these parameters. Did we start to repeat all
the discussion? Can you repeat question?
I'm just guessing it might be a family of field theories where he wants to build in some parameters directly.
Oh, the question is that it's a family of theories. I don't think that's, well, you should ask, but I don't think that's what he wants to say. What I understand from what he writes is the following thing. So, assume you would have a space, let me write QFT for a kind of moduli space of quantum theories, and you get a specific quantum theory in that space. You get a point here in this. We know from derived different theory that the tangent space. Specific quantum field theory inside the old model space should be an L infinity algebra. So the definition theory of quantum field theories, if the solution exists, should be governed by a GG algebra. That's a general principle. Tangent at this point should be an L infinity algebra. And presumably, the tangent is precisely this translated environment. And furthermore, if you specify to the space of quantum field theory, which are transition invariants, the guess is that this can be enhanced to an ED deformation problem. So usual deformation problems are parameterized by differential graded algebras, and these things are governed by L infinity algebra. That's a result of Lurie. And there's an additional result saying that if actually the parameters for your model are ED algebras, then the tangent complex to your moduli problem should itself be an ED algebra. So that's the main conjecture. That is in this paper, and how I kind of vaguely understand it. Is there a question there? So now there is some kind of previous work. Part of this is achieved. So the main work I know is that by Stefan Ollons. He has some work about EN algebra structure on observable for some quantum theories. There's also the work Costello and William. You can kind of understand their work as being exactly a proof of this conjecture in the case where you deform quantum field theory around free theories. So it's actually conservative conjecture for, let's say, points a free theory. Basically with a quadratic dimension. Poncet seemed to claim that he can do some kind of perturbative theory around non-free theory, which is kind of, if people would be able to do this, that would be great. Anyway, So that's the first conjecture. And the second one is a kind of discretized version of this. So for the second conjecture, I need a bit more time. Plain, because the second conjecture is way more precise. I mean, it makes perfect sense. So I'll spend more time explaining what it is about and stating the conjecture. So I'm gonna state everything in dimension 2. Actually, it works in any dimension just for convenience, just because like I'll be able to write two pictures. So we're the following thing. We consider a square lattice in R2. Basically, that's an oriented infinite graph like this. Okay. We have two vector spaces, H and V, and we prescribe yourself an invertible matrix in G of H tensor V. And let me just explain what is the interpretation of this matrix. So we're going to play a game. So we will put decoration on the edges of our square lattice. So let's assume that. Sorry? Like this? So assume, just for simplicity, H and V are finite dimensional. And that we have a basis. So H just like generated by EIs. And V is a basis like J. So if I write, so like we decorate like horizontal edges by element of vector H, so by basis element, by EIs, and we decorate the vertical edge by the J's. And R, if I write it on the basis element, R EI under FJ, that's RIJKL, EK tensor FL, and the interpretation of the of this coefficient, of this matrix coefficient, it's like the probability to have a concentration of the following type. So at a given, around a given vertex, we want the probability to have like the incoming horizontal edge to be decorated by EI, the incoming vertical edge to be decorated by FJ, outgoing horizontal edge to be decorated by EK, and then FL for the remaining outgoing vertical edge. So that's the like probability to have this. And actually, let me drop like the term probability, because I want the probabilistic interpretation. Let's just think of it as a weight associated with a configuration. Okay. And now we're going to play a game. So we're going to play the state sum game. So basically it works as follows. So the goal is to count configurations in a bounded region of the plane with a prescribed boundary condition. So we're just computing states. So here is how it works. So let me introduce some technology. So we define the space of boundary states in the following way. So let me just take U to be a, just for simplicity, it's going to be a convex open bound set RD, in this case R2. And so I'm going to define several vector spaces. Yes. Just 1 minute. So like I decompose the space of boundary states in different way. So let me write D plus horizontal of U. That's the set of horizontal incoming edges in U. So that means that's edges E such that E intersection with U is non, and the source E not belong to U. So like you have this, you have the square grid like this. And for instance, this is a bound horizontal incoming edge, right? And of course, you can define outgoing horizontal boundary edge in the same fashion that this thing like this here, since that one will be an outgoing edge. And you can do the same for the vertical one. So you also have D plus V and D minus V. Okay. Sorry? It doesn't matter. I mean, it's the set of such things. So the question is, are the points part of the edges? It doesn't matter so much, actually. But let's say they don't. Let's say they don't. But it doesn't matter. The source of the edge. It's an oriented. Question is, what is S? So we have an oriented graph, so that's the source of the edge. Okay, so just one observation. That since like D plus H, U is encoded by ejection with D minus Q, and this with vertical boundary edges. Like whenever you can incoming boundary edge is horizontal, you can just flow to the right, and you'll at some point, because we have the region, you'll have an outgoing edge which correspond to that one. So you have a canonical bijection between these two sets here. And we then define the state of bound, the space of boundary states, W of U. It's the space of endomorphism of what? The space of horizontal state tensors as many times as we have incoming horizontal edges. Tensor the vertical, the space of vertical states tensored as many times as incoming vertical edges. So that's the state of boundary states given region. If you want, every you have an incoming horizontal boundary edge, you decorate it by the dual of H, and the outgoing guy would be decorated by H. Overall, if you tensor these two guys, you have one endomorphism of H. And the same for the vertical guys. Like for a, if you have a V here, that's gonna be V dual there. A vertical one here, you'll get a copy of V here. Okay. And then you can define the partition function. That associated to U, that's an element of W of U, but let me write like as a map from K to W of U. It's one to something, and let me define the thing for you. And instead of giving you a definition, let me give you a bunch of examples for this. So, so let me, as a first example, if we have a region like this, so W of U in this case, this is endomorphism of, like, we have only one incoming horizontal edge, so one copy of H, and then two incoming vertical edges, so that's two copy of V. Okay, we should use some element in W in endomorphism of H vector V square. So we should produce a huge matrix element, a matrix, and this matrix will have matrix elements indexed by six indices. Okay, so let me explain what the indices of this big matrix are. So the, like, we should matrix elements of the form A, I, J, K, L, M, N. Equal to the number, so the weighted number of configurations of the form. Of this form like this, and we have, like, let's say EI, FJ, FA, EL, FM, FN. Like, we want to count all possible configurations of that type, okay? With their associated weight. Well, that's very easy. I mean, there's no freedom except the middle guy here. So this number should be equal to sum over all S of R, I, J, S, which is the weight associated to ES here, and then R S K L F. Okay, and that is actually just matrix multiplication, right? So in other words, let me write in a different way. Let me say that let me index my three vector spaces by numbers. So the first one will be the first vector space. The first vertical one will be the second, and the second vertical will be the third. And now, like this first R is R tensor one or tensor identity. So let me write R 1, 2. This should not fuse with the like index of the matrix elements. I try to be consistent, and when you have commas like this, it just that R acts on the first and second components and act as the identity on the third component. Not confused with it. And this other one is just R 1, 3. Okay. So let me give another example. Overall, it's just tensor calculus. So the state sum is nothing more than that. So let's do this. 1, 2, 3. And let's take as a region, like, which one? One. That's U. So W of U, no, sorry, endomorphism of like H squared times V to the. And now the image of one, so the partition it is going to be, so let's put R, so we just put the R matrix everywhere and we do just multiplication, but we have two directions to the matrix multiplication. So again, let me give numbers to the vector spaces. So this will be just 1 and 2 for the first two horizontal, for the two, 1 and 3, 4, 5 for the vertical ones. So start by the bottom left. So we have R 2, 3. Then we multiply with R 1. We can also multiply with R 4. And finally, we have R 2, 5. Notice that there's a little ambiguity in the way I did things, because I first went up and then to the right, but I could have done the other way around. Actually, the point is that you can switch this middle guy here to the right here. It doesn't change anything because R acts on vector spaces 1, 3, and these two here act on 2, 4, and 5. So they do commute because they act on different component of the tensor product. So ambiguity in the way we write product of R doesn't matter just because like things are R. Okay. And then we can define conditional partition function. That we have like let's see U prime inside of U. We can play the same game, and we will have a partition function Z U prime U that is going from W of U prime to W of U. it will give us a map like this. And the coefficient of this huge matrix, the map from endomorphism to endomorphism, that is just counting configurations with, how to say, boundary condition outside. So let me again give you an example.
I have a question. Damien? Damien?
Okay.
Yeah, so is there a reason that you take for the partition function the matrix instead of its trace? Like, the trace seems like what this is trace for the function is.
The question is, what I would take the matrix instead of the like, because, like, traces would happen if I would put boundary, periodic boundary conditions on the domain. I want to just specify the boundary condition to be fixed elements, not to have periodic boundary conditions.
Okay, thanks.
Does it answer your question? Okay. Okay, so let me write now one last example. So, sorry guys. The first in U prime is going to be this guy here, U prime, and the other one U will be this one. So here is, so we will start from an A, which lives in endomorphism of H tensor V square. And this should go to endomorphism of H3 tensor 3. And A is going to be sensed to the following thing. So I just put a, so let me label things again. So again, that's just 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. And now it's again matrix multiplication, but I put A in the middle here. So that's A acting on 2 and 5. But before this, I put two copies of R because they are below. We have like R3, 4, R3, 5. And then I have R3, 6. Then R 2, 6, then R 1, 4, 1, 5, 1, 6. And what does it count? This thing does not see what happens inside the blue region. It only knows about its boundary. You specify the boundary of the region here, like these things. And then you count how many configurations you have, knowing those inside boundary condition, and then you prescribe outside boundary condition, and it defines the map for you. Okay. And of course, if you increase your open subset, like you have kind of associativity property, that goes very well. So what happens is that now defined. Let me define W of 2 to be the collimate over all of W of U. using the conditional partition function. We have every time you have an inclusion map, so you can compute the colimit. And it's very easy to see that the group square acts on by translation, right? Everything wrote is completely translation invariant for the lattice, so Z2 acts on this. So, no, it's not. There's no local. Oh, so the question is it if? So first of all, it can be a shift because it's covariant. So it's if it's something which has local to global property, it would co-shift. Actually, it's not because, like, I didn't find for you what happens if you have disjoint open sets, but you actually what you reasonably have is a tensor product of these two things. What this gadget actually defines what you would call a pre-factorization or even a factorization, but one which does not satisfy the global property. It has no sheaf or co-sheaf like condition. So it's like, to use like big words, it defines for you a factorizing pre-co-sheaf on the RAN space of R2. So it defines what people call a pre-factorization algebra, and people call it an actual factorization algebra without the gluing property. So we have this action, and I can now state the conjecture of Kontsevich. So I'll set it in dimension 2. So let's take chains for the group Z2 with value in this representation. This gets an action of the E2 operator. Okay. And it looks very much like, I mean, the previous construction. So that's the space of states. If you want WR2 is just like, it's the limits, it's the collimit of the space of state bounded region. So it's the space, I don't know, set of state. I mean, I don't know what this means, but if taking this chain, we're actually computing rather not translation invariant things, but translation invariant things. Actually, that's the chains on a group with values in representations. That's the derived functor for co-invariant.
Question? It's Damien.
The question is what I mean by chains on Z2 with values in representations. Like there's a complex, an explicit complex that you can write. Like when you have a group and a representation, that's okay. That's what compute group homology. Okay.
Damien.
Yeah. Question.
How sensitive is this to the choice of R matrix?
So how is it sensitive to the choice of R matrix? Well, I mean, this is true anyway, but the E2 algebra changes, I don't know. I don't expect things to be just like, I think for different R's, these are really different E2 algebras. I would guess that they conjugated R's, you would get different E2 algebras. So I said that I choose my R matrix to be invisible. I suspect that things actually still work if it's not invertible, but then it would get a non-unital E2 algebra.
Thanks.
Is that okay? So the question is how it did the choice of the lattice. I don't know how to make it work for different things that are square. I even don't know how to state the conjecture. I mean, what doesn't work is that, if you take some kind of honeycomb lattice, where is your group structure?
these subjects lattice add more edge. Can you?
The question is that can you subdivide the lattice and more edges? Like that would be enough for normalization type thing? I don't know. I don't know how to compare things depending on the size of the mesh of the lattice.
I have a question.
Okay.
Sorry, I have another question.
Now explain how. Yeah.
Is this complex typically interesting or only for special R?
I didn't get the question.
Is this complex typically interesting or only for special R matrices?
I think it's interesting on its own, but I basically don't know what happens. Like that's another question. What happens if you take some specific R satisfying the Young-Baxter equation? I don't know what it says about the complex. I have no idea. It was the homology of the complex. I have no idea about this. I don't know. No, so I was mentioning Young-Baxter in H is equal to V. Then in dimension two, you could add the matrix to this matrix to satisfy the Baxter equation. I don't know what it says, if it says that this is two algebraic structure or satisfy some property. I don't know. It should be interesting, but I don't know what it does. Yeah, I know that, but I don't know what about this E2 algebra specifically. Okay. So, yeah, so basically the theorem that we got with Damien Leger is that this conjecture. And let me try to, there's not much time, so I'll try to explain the proof of the conjecture. Okay, so like I need to introduce some category of discretized disks. So here's how it is defined. So let me call this CD2 for discretized disk in dimension 2. So it's a 2-1 category. It's a 2 category, but the two modems are all invertible. So objects are finite unions of disks in R2. One morphism. So I'm not going to give you the complete description of one morphism, but they are generated by two things. So inclusion of finite disk into other disks. So that looks like it's what you have when you have prefactorization algebra. But there's another piece of data, which is discretized path between those operations. So typically, we also we have like some disjoint union of disks, and we can move one disk into on the lattice by one step, either horizontally or vertically. The point is that there's something forbidden. This move, this should never pass through a configuration where you have non-disjoint things. The condition of being disjoint should remain all the time when you move like this. So, You shouldn't anything else, right? So this completely, I mean, inclusion and this kind of translations generate completely your thing. So it looks very much like we're taking the operat of disk and we top project. Usually what you do is you get two operat when you do this, but we topologize it kind of discrete way. We only add discrete path instead of actual path, but it's enough, I think, works. And the homomorphisms. Yeah, that's the inverse, yeah. If you back the path, that's the inverse, yeah. And the two morphisms, or two isomorphisms, they are generated by things of that sort. So by two cells like this. So if you do a move like first horizontally and then vertically, or the other way around, like we consider that we have a homotopy in these two moves. Even though, like, we want this homotopy never to cross another disk, even like the homotopy should never go through, again for configuration when things actually do. Okay. So actually, these two categories, it has an E2 monoid structure. And so, like E2 monoidal, actually, I will use the Dunnery theorem. It's twice monoidal. E1 monoidal, it's twice E1 monoidal. One E1 box E1 monoidal. So it has two compatible monoidal structures. And these two compatible structures are as follows. So there are two partial orders on So there's a vertical, horizontal partial order. We have this if A is left, if the configuration A is left, is at the left of configuration B. And we also have a kind of vertical order. We have A below B, A is below B, basically. And now we have a tensor product. Let me write the horizontal one, and you'll see the vertical one. So the horizontal tensor product, it's definitely not an H for homotopy tensor product. It's for horizontal. So it's the difference of the two configurations. We translate the second configuration to the right. An integer n is minimal so that a is left b plus m0. And you do the same, you can get a vertical tensor product, and you can show that these two are compatible, and that finds an E2 monoidal structure on this category. Okay. So, like there's a consequence is if you take the homotopy category of D2, it's a braided monoidal category. So the question is that's the category that depends on the R matrix, and it's the R matrix will give us a factor out of this category. Okay. The homotopy category is braided monoidal, and actually even explicitly write the braiding by using prioritized paths that makes move like configuration around each other like this. Then there's I need some kind of thoughts, like how to extract EN algebras from EN monoidal vectors. So if C and D are EN monoidal categories, and if F is an EN monoidal function, limits of this functor, which is an object in D, is an EN algebra in the target category. And the one way to see this is a bit pedantic. Like you have like your functor from C to D, you have the terminal category here, and like you write a left can extension. So a colimit is a left can extension, and like all the business of can extension works like in like for with structure within the structures. So that guy here is an EN monoidal functor, and an EN monoidal functor for the something, it's exactly an object with an EN algebra in the target category. So that's how we are going to construct our E2 algebra. And let me. Should I wait for them or? Okay. So let me just take the following thing. So C being the discretized disk category, and D category of complexes. And I claim that going from DD2 to complexes, actually it goes to vect, but it doesn't matter. Like I claim that sending U to W of U and sending an inclusion to the conditional partition function and like translations are sent to identities, I claim that this functor is actually too small. And it's actually not part of D. And I should actually say that it's the way I phrase it is a bit more complicated than it should be. Like inside complexes vector spaces, and we have a map from the DD2 to its homotopy category, and actually the this feature, like this W conditional partition function, actually it's a functor from the homotopy category to VEC. So the functor I want to consider actually factors through a very like dummy feature from an actual category, braided monoidal to vector space. And it's a braided monoidal feature. Okay, that's the statement, and now I have a minute to explain how you can prove that using this. So can you so the question is that the two isomorphism because identity, when we pass to the homotopy category, like that's correct. Actually, you don't need to go to DD2. I only need to use the homotopy category. I just expect that I think this category DD2 is pretty interesting. I hope actually to find examples, maybe coming from physics, where actually the higher morphisms do important and do matter. But it is true that it's not completely necessary. The question, what do you get checking the collimate? That's what I'm about to do, just to conclude and prove the conjecture. Sorry? No, that's why you call the collimate in complex. So the question is that there's no E2 algebra interesting E2 in complexes, in vector spaces. I rather disagree because there are interesting iterative algebra. But anyway, like I'm going to compute, that's why I want to compute the collimate of the white arrow and not the blue one. If you compute the collimates with values in vector space, you get something which is not that interesting. But if you can take compute the collimates and multiple collimates in complexes, you will get something interesting. Basically, if you compute the collimate in spaces, you get the zeroth cohomology of the nice collimate in complexes. Your question is truly interesting. Like, I don't know. I think like definitely. Apart from like, it is interesting in the sense that's the homology or the complex computing homology of this representation. If you find it interesting by its own, or if more. Argument for this. I don't have more evidence for this kind of complex to be, but I think it is. But yeah. Okay, so let me just take some time to conclude. So if you want to compute the you can actually do it in two steps. So, and it works for any E2 monomial function. So we have like E2, we have a function to axis, and we want to compute an extension through the point here. And let me factor this arrow here through another category. The category is exactly the same one as DD2, but without the disks, only the path and the homotopy, the disk path and the homotopy. So it has only one object. Its morphisms are generated by moves to the right or the left or up and down. And then we have a specific homotopy that tells us that like moving right and up or up and right, that's the same thing essentially. So it's kind of cool for BZ2 if you want. It's just like Z2 view category in a fancy way. But the nice thing is that like we can compute the Kahn extension in two steps. So we compute it in the first step. What it does, we just take the functor is just taking the collimate over all U, but it should be a homotopy collimate, but the it happens to be an actual collimate because the category of the U's with inclusion, it's a filtered category. So in here, just limits over all U F of U. So that's what I called, let's say F of R2, where F was W before. And then if you compute further the collimate here, not complicated to convince yourself that you're computing the co-invariance of the Z2 action on F of R2 in a homotopy way. So in the end, this functor is just like chains z2 f of R2. And if you apply it to the function, so this gets an E2 algebra structure. The computation of like the collimit of any feature of that sort in this way, plus the fact that we have a little functor given by our game state sum, we indeed have a proof of Kontsevich conjecture. I just want to say a few words, like a few remarks. So, actually, in higher dimensions, because everything factors through the homotopy category, we would expect to have an EN algebra, but we actually have an infinity algebra. We have actually something which is maximally commutative, if you wish. Just because when you in higher dimension it works the same way, so it factors to the homotopy category D3, and like it's actual ED monoidal, E3 monoidal one category, so it's completely strict monoidal. So the collimit will be an infinity algebra. So that's kind of something we didn't expect it while just looking at the trajectory. It was claiming that there's an ED algebra, but for D bigger than 3 or equal to 3, it's just infinity. There's a lot of like, they say like, if the R matrix satisfies the expression, I have no idea what happens. If it tells something about this gadget. And I would be interested to like other models, like there are models on hyperbolic space, which are like physicists call this Mera models, where you have some group of translations that arise. As soon as you can write a lattice which has some group structure, or you can translate a subset, you might want to try to write something and to see if there's something interesting coming up. Okay, thank you very much.
Side. I have a question. Could you isolate where invertibility of the R matrix was used, if at all?
So the question is about the invertibility of the R matrix. I think I said before that. So actually, if the R matrix is not invertible, let's take the most general case. Let's take the R matrix to be just zero. You will be able to construct some KN algebra, but it will be non-unital.
Right.
Because the map from K to W of U will be just zero. And so I haven't checked all the details, but I'm pretty sure that if you take a non-invertible matrix, you'll get a non-unital EN algebra.
Any other questions on this side?
I think they are asking for questions. So the question is that is having applications to like actual problem like condensed matter or topological phases? I don't know. Guess the answer is no. But I don't know. Sorry? You're saying that an algebra object would be a lax monoidal functor? I don't think so.
Yeah? It's the case that a conic section along just the
Yeah, there are too many things, so.
I can repeat everything.
So the question is that like, is this functor should be lax monoidal instead of being monoidal. Is that the, yeah. Probably yes, but probably it's only lax monoidal after doing the extension. I don't think it's only. So, yeah. the question, the vertical and horizontal direction are not related. It is true. Not. So, like, if you assume that horizontal and vertical vector spaces are just the same, you might want like the R matrix by some kind of rotation invariant or whatever, and you might get something more structured. I don't know, an oriented D2 algebra, but yeah, maybe, I don't know. But in this picture, it's unrelated.
Just as in conservative, is there a way to extract an infinity algebra to algebra that is a kind of derivation of such?
Okay, so like you asked, if like in conjecture A, it's an infinity algebra structure that has a deformation interpretation. The answer is yes, always. Every time you have an E2 algebra, like after shift, you have an infinity algebra, and that's equivalent to a deformation functor. But I guess you ask, like, okay, write the explicit deformation functor, which I don't know. I think like you can write a kind of definition of what probably it's possible, but I don't know how to write a definition of lattice theory so that this gadget is going to be the tangent to the space of, I don't know, translation of lattice theories. That would be, I think, would be the answer to your question, but I don't know how to do that. The generalizations for D bigger than 2, yes. It works for in I just like explained in dimension 2 for in dimension D you have a D one category of discrete disks. But and in this case it turns out that the ED algebra you get is actually an ED algebra. Exactly.
Okay. I don't see more questions. Thanks, Amiel, again.